Welcome, all you sinners and sodomites, to episode 8 of Bible Stories for Atheists. I'm Josh.
I'm Lynn.
We are your guides to the morally maniacal stories, literally littering the Bible. This week, we're going to be digging deeper into Exodus, digging deeper into it.
Yeah. Exiting further.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we record these a little bit earlier than we actually release
Yes. The
episodes. So stuff's been going down in Texas.
Oh, shocking nobody.
In Texas, there's this law that's gone into effect where you can go out after women who have had an abortion beyond 6 weeks.
Yep.
And you can sue them personally, is my understanding, for at least $10,000. I think
anyone can sue them.
Yeah. And anybody involved in the abortion happening.
Except the man who got her pregnant. I'm sorry. Except the man who got her pregnant, because, you know, he just gets to skate off scot-free.
Right. Shouldn't he also get sued for inseminating her in the first place?
Yes.
Right.
All men should be sued for inseminating.
Because the abortion
women
would not have happened.
No.
If
he would have fucking wrapped his dick up.
Right. We normally don't get political on the podcast and everything, but when it comes to women's rights, like, it's a big thing for me, and obviously it's a big thing for you, and it's a big thing for fucking women. It's a big thing for at least half the population.
Yes.
This is the state forcing a woman to go through something as emotionally and physically traumatic as an unwanted pregnancy when there is a safe medical alternative. Yeah. They are trying to get the state to force women to go through this this process.
Because kids want to be raised as a punishment.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That makes for healthy fucking children, unwanted children being raised by people who didn't want them to begin with. And it's been proven, and I'm trying to remember.
Freakonomics.
Yes, yeah. For crime rates.
Yes.
After abortion was made legal.
After Roe v. Wade. 18 years after Roe v. Wade.
Crime rates went down significantly because guess what? When you raise children, when children are raised by parents who want them.
Yes.
They pay more attention to them.
Right.
And crime rates go down because there's less children who are physically abused, mentally abused, emotionally abused, neglected.
Yeah.
Raised in situations where they shouldn't be.
So many abortions happen because women are already in they're married with kids, but they just cannot financially support another kid.
Right.
So if they are able to have an abortion, they're able to pour time, energy, and resources into the kids they have.
Yes.
They can give them the love and support they need to have good lives. Mm-hmm.
I don't care if somebody is anti-abortion. If you don't want to have an abortion, then you don't
get an abortion.
Have an abortion.
Yeah.
And what it comes down to is the idea that your religious beliefs supersede my logical beliefs. But it's really the sort of fetishization of humans being like more important than anything else.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of anti-choice people would say that you are disrupting the will of God by having this
abortion. But I don't believe in God, so they're really forcing their religious beliefs on me.
What I think is kind of interesting with it is, at what point do you say you're intervening in what God does, and what point are you saying it's fine? Oh, it's interesting that so-and-so is anti-abortion because they wear glasses. Isn't that intervening in what God
wants
designed?
You to not be able to see?
Right. God wants you not be able to see. So, like, if let's say you have the baby, should you not teach it how to read? God didn't teach it to read. So, you know, where does that line get drawn? You know, not that any of our laws should be fucking based on religion at all.
0%.
The First Amendment says that we are not supposed to pass any laws lifting up or oppressing any religion.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you need to have a separation between church and state. But that said, the Jewish tradition is that life does not start until the baby takes its first breath.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to matter to a lot of these people. I will also point you to Numbers 5:11 through 31, where God lays out a system. If a woman basically has been unfaithful and she's pregnant, or if she's pregnant and the husband thinks she's been unfaithful, there's this ritual that they will do where the priest will make bitter water and will give it to her. And if she has been unfaithful, it will cause her to miscarry. Therefore, God lays out how to give her an abortion. And if she hasn't been unfaithful, then it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Basically. So if she's a witch, she'll float.
Yeah.
If she's not, she'll drown.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of mindset to it. So there's a Bible verse literally dictating how to deliver an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
And I would just encourage anybody who has considered themselves to be pro-life, maybe join a suicide hotline.
Yeah.
You know?
Or like go feed a homeless person.
Or
foster some children.
Foster some children. Or start advocating for free birth control in every single store.
Yeah.
Across America. Mm-hmm. Government-funded birth control, or however you want to fund for right. it. But like reliable birth control, absolutely not just accessible, but freely available to everybody, you know, so.
And wear a mask.
And wear a fucking mask. I was just seeing something the other day about how coronavirus is causing miscarriages like crazy.
Well, yeah, lack of oxygen to a fetus is a bad thing.
Yeah.
On to a happier subject.
Yeah.
The Bible.
Right. So we're going to be starting in Exodus 14 this week for those following along. This episode is Manna-Crusted Quail with Rock Water. All right, we got to get in an episode before the water heater turns back on.
The world's loudest water heater.
So, I think I misspoke.
Uh-oh.
Last episode.
Are we going to have a Josh's corrections corner every
da, 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 da.
Here's where I fucked up last time.
Yeah. So, it's kind of a big one too because I said that last episode was the Exodus. They're still in Egypt.
Okay.
So technically, it's this episode that we're actually getting to the exit okay. us.
The exit us?
The exit us. So yeah, if you remember, we've gone over in the past couple episodes, we started off with the origin story of Moses, the baby in the basket and everything. And we got into the mushroom trip with the burning bush and everything. And then in the last episode, we went into all the
plagues.
The plagues. Yep.
Yes, and
the
10
days. Plagues. And finally, Pharaoh was like, fuck it, go, get out of here.
And that's where we ended.
And that's kind of where we ended. Yeah. And they've come to the Red Sea, quote unquote.
Okay.
It's actually a river leading, it's basically the Suez Canal.
Actually, okay. Sure.
Is where they, nobody knows exactly where they would have crossed.
Right.
But it's roughly around where the Suez Canal is.
Okay.
Which y'all might remember from getting jammed up and causing a huge problem this last year.
I remember.
Yeah. They had a lot of stuff.
Is the Suez Canal, this is, never mind. I'll research that afterwards.
Okay.
I was going to ask if the Suez Canal was man-made, but.
So it doesn't look like, it looks like the river's been there.
Okay.
I actually have a map right here.
Most canals, I feel like, have had assistance from the people.
I'm sure they have, like, you know,
widened it
and stuff. But yeah, it's.
Oh, yeah. There is the Gulf of Suez.
Yeah, the Gulf of Suez. So this is
so
roughly
the Red Sea is underneath it.
That's the thing, is the Red Sea is to the south of where they are, actually. So there's the Gulf of Suez, which sits between the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. There's a river that kind of connects the Mediterranean Sea to the Gulf of Suez. And that's where, according to the NIV, they think they would have crossed.
Okay.
So So they're actually nowhere near the Red Sea. And God showed up in the form of a pillar of cloud during the day.
Right,
to guide them where to go.
And a flame tornado at night.
Basically, yeah, a pillar of fire. Yes.
They were called the flame tornado.
Yes.
Yes.
God then tells them, kicking into the new stuff, God tells them to go to this place, and I'm not going to get specific because who cares, but go to this place. Because that's going to make Pharaoh think you don't know where you're going.
Pharaoh told them to go.
Pharaoh told them to go, right? Yeah. And so God
is like, does he not know Pharaoh told him to go?
No, God is going to harden Pharaoh's heart again.
Oh, his dick.
Well, yeah. We only get a few of these, so I was just going to stick with the heart. Oh,
I thought we were just changing the Bible.
Oh, okay. So basically what happens is Pharaoh comes to his senses and is like, wait a second, they're gone? Well, yeah, you told them to go, but then they're gone. He decides he's going to go after them, and it says he took 600 of the best chariots along with all other chariots in Egypt.
FYI, this is how many good chariots I have.
Yep, and I'm taking all of them, as well as every other one. Then the Lord hardened the dick of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites. So again, Pharaoh would be doing the right thing here, letting them go.
Yeah.
But God is saying, no, you're going to go after them.
Yeah, not only is God saying, no, you're going to go after them, God also said to Moses, like, hey, just pretend you're lost.
Right.
So they could have went.
Yeah.
Crossed.
Yep.
And just been on the other side.
Yep.
Where it is not Pharaoh's jurisdiction.
Right. Apparently.
And Pharaoh would have been like, yeah, man, I told him to go.
Right.
But
we're going to make the best out of a bad situation.
That's a real Dennis the Menace.
Yeah. He just keeps deciding to make it terrible over and over again.
It's so fucked up.
So Pharaoh shows up, you know, with all of his army and everything, and the Israelites are terrified. And they say to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the desert. So they're a little ungrateful. Moses says, don't be afraid. You only need to be still. Okay, so basically just sit still.
Pharaohs can only see movement.
Where'd they go? They were just here. Just clapping, trying to get them to move. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Basically, he's like, what the fuck? I just got you out of there. And already you're pissed? Yes, now I'm done. God. Now, yes, now I'm not going to help you anymore.
Right, yeah. Fucked up.
Yeah. So he tells Moses to raise the staff, and he's going to divide the water.
Okay, the parting of the Red Sea.
Quote, unquote, Red Sea, yeah.
Oh, I forgot that's how you do that without the actual fingers.
Yes.
That one you can hear.
Yeah, quote, unquote, yes.
Yeah. I'm just like, air quotes.
Quote, unquote, is the air quotes of speaking.
The verbal air quotes, yeah.
So God tells him to raise the staff. He'll part the waters. I will harden the dicks of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them.
See, making the pile better. Yeah.
So basically God's saying, I'll let the Israelites cross on dry ground and I'll make the Egyptians go in after them. And so then, I get to kill them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Based on something he's making them do.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
He's going to punish them for the thing he's making them do.
Yes.
Yeah. Then the angel of God shows up.
Okay.
Who
stands in front of him with a sword.
Apparently, he'd been with them, even though he wasn't mentioned. he had been with him, but at this point he goes behind the Israelites along with the pillar of cloud. And throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other side. So neither went near the other all night long. So then Moses stretches out his hand over the sea. And all that night, the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. So the water was divided into walls on either side.
Yeah. Can we talk about the logistics of this a little bit?
Sure.
Because if you part, even if you could part waters.
Yeah.
It's not going to be dry land that's underneath there. There's layers and layers and layers of sediment that is right. very mushy and muddy to walk on.
Yeah.
So they're making it sound like you part the waters and also air dry the ground yeah. whilst doing that, which is completely ridiculous.
Like that would just take forever.
I mean, they'd have to trudge through mud, I would expect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is hard.
Maybe God parted the mud as well. Oh, like how deep do you right. have to go for dry land underneath
yeah. mud? Pretty deep, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, but no, the Bible doesn't explain that.
So if you think about it in terms of that, so maybe he did part all of the sediment and things like that.
Yeah.
When he refloods it, as we know he's going to do, spoilers.
Yeah.
Everybody.
He doesn't just leave it like that.
Right. When it refloods and the Egyptians are in there, not only are they getting drowned, they're getting captured into this mud. So even if they could swim,
yeah,
they wouldn't be able to because they would be stuck in all this muck and mud that kind of just quicksands them to the ground.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, definitely murdering them.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah.
With no chance of survival. Yeah.
Just as he has murdered a bunch of people up till now.
Right.
Yeah, these Egyptians are pretty screwed. Okay, so then the Israelites start making their way through, right, on the, let's call it dry ground. And the Egyptians pursue them. God causes confusion with the Egyptians, and he starts jamming up all of their the chariot wheels and stuff like that. And probably with mud. And he slows them down.
Okay.
Right? Like, why doesn't he just smite them all then and there? Who knows?
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was able to take out all the firstborn.
It's like he doesn't want everybody to know that he's the one that kills them.
Right. It's like he wants to tell a compelling story. It's like that's the main motivation to this. The Egyptians start basically getting scared. They're like, let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt, which reminds me of Holy Grail. Run away! Oh. Run away! You know?
Yeah. Nope.
So the Lord says to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea and so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen. So Moses does, and obviously they all drown. But the Israelites were able to get through on dry ground.
Yep.
And that's them leaving Egypt. That's the Exodus.
Exiting Egypt.
Yep. But yeah, so we get into this song called the Song of Moses and Miriam. Miriam is his sister.
Is Moses' sister?
Yeah, who you remember during the story of the basket and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Miriam,
she's the one who is
like, let me get my mom to
breastfeed the baby.
Yeah. Yes. And then you can pay her to take care of her own kid.
Right.
Yeah. So there's this whole song and it's a lot of like, you know, God is the one who drowned the Pharaoh's officers in the Red Sea. And it's very violent.
Is it an actual like lyrics to the song?
Yeah. It's literally like it's a poem. You know, I'm not going to read the whole thing.
You're not going to sing it?
I have no idea what the melody would have been.
Well, I'm bummed.
And also, this is not the language it would have been in.
Yeah, I mean, still, you could have given it the good old college try.
I will point out one really good verse in this, though. By the blast of your nostrils, the waters piled up.
By the blast of your nostrils?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So apparently, the strong eastern wind was God blowing his nose.
Oh, my God. fucked up.
Yeah.
What a weird, like, why? I mean, I would much have rather been like by the blast of your ass or something like that.
Foul smelling wind.
Big fart.
Yeah. And then it like goes into like the nations will hear and tremble. Anguish will grip the people of Philistia. The chiefs of Edom will be terrified. The leaders of Moab will be seized with trembling. The people of Canaan will melt away. Really uplifting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 days they travel without finding any water. They eventually come to a place called Mara, where there was water, but it was bitter, so they couldn't drink it.
Oh.
Mara like, means bitter, by the
like
way.
Like sulfurous water, maybe? Or
probably. That's what it kind of sounds
salt
like.
Salt water?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Ooh. But the people grumbled.
I would grumble, too. And if it was sulfurous and then they drank it, their intestines would be grumbling.
Right.
Sulfur makes your insides
hurt.
Very rumbly.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, so they're like, what are we going to drink? And they're grumbling to Moses. And Moses cries out to God. And God tells him to pick up this piece of wood and throw it in the water. And that somehow filters it.
Oh.
And that wood was called Brita.
Not falling for
no.
it.
No.
I almost did. I'm not going to.
The Lord says, if you listen carefully to everything I'm telling you to do and everything, to all my decrees and everything, I will never bring any of the diseases that I brought to Egypt onto any of you. Not that that matters because they'll keep going against God anyway. Over and over again.
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, after watching what God and knowing what God did to the Egyptians, why would anyone...
I know.
Why would anyone just be like, what is he going to do to us?
Yeah.
I don't know, cover you in boils?
Right.
Just off the top of my head?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff he could do to you. But no, he brought you all the way out here to drown.
Yes.
Or to drown, to die of thirst.
Right.
You know? So they come finally to the desert of Sin. The whole community grumbled. Because they
bunch
didn't
of complainers.
I know. Basically, that they don't have any food now.
Right.
So yeah. Water was a problem. Now food is a problem.
Ugh, needy.
And, yeah, and they're talking about how like, oh, we had all the food we wanted, basically in Egypt. They're acting like everything was great in Egypt.
Right.
Why did you bring us out here? We didn't want this. And then the Lord says to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions."
Oh, they're not gonna.
No.
No.
On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on other days, every sixth day.
Okay.
At twilight, you will eat meat, and in the morning, you will be filled with bread. That evening, quail came. And in the morning, a layer of dew was around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. Israelites saw it, and they said to each other, "What is it?" Which apparently sounds very similar to the word manna.
Okay.
What
manna,
is it?
Manna from heaven?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is manna. This is the bread that they're going to eat for the rest of the time.
It's in flakes on the ground?
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody can really...
Like instant mashed potatoes?
I know. Yeah, that's what it kind of sounds like, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah. Nobody can really describe it because obviously it's not real.
Right.
Like there is nothing that really corresponds to this. You know?
Where's that movie? Where's the movie of them being in the desert and thinking they're eating bread and it's just not, it's just air.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of people in the desert eating air.
Yeah.
Like a real Hook scenario, right? Like where they're having like that feast.
Group delusion.
Yeah.
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 And the only real food they're getting is this quail that shows up in the night.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe if even.
Yeah.
One quail. For how many people exited?
No, I mean, I don't think it was one. I don't think it was one quail.
You know what you said, except for that quail that showed up.
I think that's the plural, isn't it? Is it quails?
Yeah.
I thought quail was plural for quail. Kind of like...
I don't know the answer to that question, unfortunately.
Kind of like moose. It's not meese.
Okay. All right.
I just assumed.
Anyway.
That'd be really weird if God was like, I'm sending you one quail.
I know. That's why I'm like to split between all of you.
For 2 million people. Yeah. For 2 million people.
This is going to be a real fish and loaves situation I got going on here.
They're all just chasing it down, trying to get it.
Quails.
Is it quails?
Yeah. What do you call more than one quail? Add the S so that it's plural form. The plural form of quail is quails, but it also is quail.
Yeah, because it specifically says that evening quail came and covered the camp.
Just covered the camp.
Yeah.
It was just quails.
It was one giant quail that just sat on the camp.
If they were smart about it, they'd let it lay some eggs before they ate it.
Right. Yeah.
So then they'd have eggs.
Yeah. But they didn't. So Moses tells them to take an omer for each person you have in your tent.
What's an omer?
An omer is possibly about 3 pounds, according to the footnotes. So for each person you gather, this is a manna. They don't talk about the quail at all anymore.
Well, I mean, we all know what's going to happen to the quail.
Yeah. But as far as the manna is concerned, they are to take an omer for each person you have in your tent. The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. But everybody basically had exactly how much they needed.
That sentence doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone did what they're told. Some took more, some took less, but basically everyone had the exact amount.
Yeah. The one who gathered much did not have too much. The one who gathered little did not have too little.
They did not. It wasn't self-indulgent or self-neglectful.
I guess so,
It was accidental.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to weigh an omer.
Right, yeah. Moses said to him, nobody is to keep any of it until morning. Of course, some of them did. But in the morning, the manna was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Not that it mattered because nobody, like there was no follow-up to it. Moses was angry, just so you know. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as they needed, and when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, and the Lord commanded that tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest. And this is the first time the Sabbath is mentioned.
Okay. Is it Saturday?
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on this day, they actually save the manna, you know, the extra manna that they collected the day before, and it keeps fine, you know. So God could clearly let this manna last.
Right.
But chooses not to.
Yeah, because he likes to make things real difficult.
Yeah. On the seventh day, there were, of course, some people who went out to gather more manna, and they found that there wasn't any, so just didn't show up on those days. God says to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands? Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why though? I would be that problem child. Like it's probably a good thing it was Moses and not me.
Right.
Because every time he was like, people aren't supposed to do this or this or this, I would 100% always be like, why though?
Right. Yeah.
Why can't we go out? Are there spiders?
every Saturday?
Giant spiders from hell?
Yeah. Why did you make those?
Does it rain? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Why can't we go outside on Sunday? I don't get it.
Yeah. So I was actually watching a video recently of this comedian who converted to Judaism. He was talking about the Sabbath being like a day of like self-wellness, mm-hmm. you know, like where you're really just kind of checking in with yourself. You're taking a break. You're unplugging from the internet.
Yeah, you're literally like not supposed to touch any electronics.
Yeah.
Carry things.
If you're Orthodox, you're really going to take it to an extreme level. But if you're not Orthodox, you can just kind of look at it as a day of self-care.
Okay.
You know? And I kind of, you know, I can see the appeal to that.
Sure.
That's, there's, totally makes sense that you would dedicate, a day to it. And the way he was talking about it too is it doesn't even necessarily have to be like one specific day. You know, it can just be like, this is Sabbath time, you know?
Gotcha.
Anyway, this is where it starts.
Okay. Yeah. They're being forced into it though, which is a little counterproductive.
Yeah.
If it's self-care.
Right.
Very stressful self-care. Yeah. What if what you want to do is work?
Right. What if you need to work for some reason? Yeah. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed and tasted like wafers made with honey. So it was kind of a sweet taste. And God commands them to take an omer of manna and keep it for generations to come. As I remember correctly, they apparently put this in the Ark of the Covenant with the Ten Commandments.
Oh.
And that's like it was supposed to be stored in there. And so for generations to come, this one omer of manna would not like rot or anything like that. And everybody could see the manna. That worked out well.
But why? Again, why? Why keep a fucking 3 pounds of this bread nougat pistachio? I don't know, whatever bullshit it is.
Yeah. So they can see the bread I gave you to eat in the wilderness when I brought you out of Egypt.
God is literally like, I need you to be able to prove to everybody that I did this for you.
Yeah.
You guys are You guys are going to be my alibi. This bread is my alibi.
Right.
I didn't kill those Egyptians. I was here with you guys giving you bread and shit.
Right. And I'm going to give you all a day off every week for this.
The Ark of the Covenant, that's a real thing. This is when you really learn my ignorance about what happened in the Bible, because I just assumed that had to do with Indiana Jones.
Oh, no. The Ark of the Covenant was totally
a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's coming up here. The Lord commanded Moses and Aaron to put the manna with the tablets of the covenant law, which has not been made yet.
Oh, yeah, so we haven't gotten to that part yet, right?
Nope, we have not.
So this is foreshadowing.
Yeah. Or it's
written afterwards.
Yeah, it's written out of order. They camp at this place called Rephidim, but there was no water. So they grumbled and were like, give us water to drink. Moses was like, why are you quarreling with me? I'm just doing what God says. If you haven't figured out, you know.
This is how this conversation goes. We don't have any water, Moses. Why don't we have any fucking water? Would you guys stop bitching at me?
Right.
I'm doing the best that I can.
Yeah, that's literally what this is like. And then they're like, why did you bring us out here? You know, for our children and our livestock to die of thirst, you know? And Moses finally goes to the God and he's like, they're getting ready to stone me. You know, you got to do something. So God says to you, go in front of all of the people and take the staff in your hand, the one that you struck the Nile with, and strike this rock there, okay?
Okay.
And water will pour out of this rock. And so he does, and therefore he called the place Massa and Meribah. So the whole thing is just another excuse for why stuff is named this.
Right.
Those names, Massa means testing, Meribah means quarreling.
Okay.
So,
is there somewhere in that area of the world where you can literally see water coming out of a rock?
No.
Like a spring?
No. Be interesting if there was.
It'd be, that would be, yeah, for sure. But also it just sounds like a natural spring.
Yeah.
That Moses happened to find.
Yeah. And the very weak rock.
And he cracked the rock and, or like he hit it and it, but moved.
Right.
A little bit. So water just started bubbling out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was capped. Yeah. Somehow. I don't know how natural
turns out Moses
work.
Was just a really good geologist.
Right.
Way ahead of his time. So Amalekites show up.
Okay.
And they decide to start attacking the Israelites.
Isn't that the dark elf from Thor?
Was that the second movie?
I think so.
I totally blocked that movie out.
I know, me too.
It would be awesome if there was a crossover with Thor story.
It would be amazing.
Unfortunately, the Bible cinematic universe is kind of in its own bubble. So the Amalekites show up and they attack the Israelites. And the best character in the entire Bible shows up. And it's not God or Jesus.
Malekith the Accursed.
It's Joshua.
Oh, Joshua shows up.
Joshua shows up.
Isn't he dead? He dead.
He dead?
Joshua's dead, yeah.
What?
He dead?
Why would he be dead?
It's because it's a long time after he was alive, yeah? Joshua?
Joshua?
Didn't you just say Joshua? Joshua shows up.
Are you talking about Joseph?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
There's too many J names now.
Yeah. So Joseph is long dead.
Joseph, Jacob, this Joshua. Who's Joshua?
Well, we've never heard of
him
until now.
Okay, this is where I got confused because you made it sound like I was supposed to know who this was.
No, I mean, you just know the name.
Do I? Okay, apparently not. I know your name.
Yeah.
Is this who you're named after?
Yeah.
Okay.
And therefore, he's the best character in the Bible.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
But no, so Joshua is going to become, and apparently already is, Moses' right-hand man. So, you know, even though Aaron is kind of supposed to be that.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one that had all the magic at the start.
Aaron takes on a priestly role, basically, within the Israelites. Like all of the Israelite priests end up kind of stemming from his line.
Okay.
Sort of. That's kind of a generalization. But but Joshua ends up being like the general, like that leads the military.
Okay.
With Moses and things like that. So Moses says to Joshua, tells him to go and fight the Amalekites. I'm going to go work some God magic, right?
Okay.
So Moses goes up on this hill overlooking the battle, and he holds up the staff. And as long as he holds up the staff, the Israelites were winning the battle.
Okay.
But if he lowered the staff, they would start losing, right?
Well, that seems arbitrary.
Right.
But...
So they start propping up his arms with stones and stuff.
They would have to,
yeah? Yeah, to hold up his arms. And then Joshua was able to overcome the Amalekites, and they took them out.
So 2 million Israelites leave Egypt.
Right. 600,000 men, specifically.
So, okay. They were slaves, right?
Yes.
They're enslaved by the Egyptians. They leave. They've been wandering the desert for I don't know how long now. It's 40 years in total, but I don't know where they're at in that wander.
I don't think it's very long, but they are not specific about the timeline here.
So they managed to put together a military in that time?
Yeah. Like, I don't know what like weapons they have.
Right. Organized military.
Right.
Even in 40 years, that seems a little bit ridiculous, but in an even shorter amount of time, I guess that's why Moses needed to hold up the fucking stick.
Right. They needed God intervention.
Now we know where sports superstition comes from. Moses is the original mega fan.
If I don't hold up this John 3:16 sign, they're not going to win.
Every time I wear these socks,
yeah,
my team wins. Therefore, I have to wear these socks every single time or they'll lose. And I cannot wash them.
Right. Yeah.
That would wash the winning right out of them.
I can't wash my staff.
Oh.
So then God tells them to write this down, all this down on a scroll. Make sure that Joshua hears it for some reason. And so this is like God apparently telling them to record this as history, you know?
Right.
And I will completely blot out the name of Amalek from under heaven. But then it immediately says, the Lord will be at war with the Amalekites from generation to generation, which seemed to contradict themselves, those two statements. Yeah, and then Jethro shows up.
Jethro.
Yeah, Jethro. You remember the father-in-law, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro. One half of that gay power couple.
Yes. The other one was, what was the other one's name?
Raul.
Raul and Jethro.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if you haven't listened to the last episode or the first episode of the about Exodus, Moses's father-in-law is named Raul in one chapter, and then in the next chapter it just changes to Jethro. And our best guess is that it's actually a gay couple.
It would make the most sense and be the most beautiful thing in the Bible.
Yes, it would be. So Jethro also is supposed to be the high priest of Midian.
Right.
Yes. Background there.
Yep.
Jethro had heard of everything God had done for Moses because Moses apparently had sent away his wife to talk to Jethro with their two sons, which we're just now hearing about a second son.
But they're still wandering in the desert. Yeah?
Yeah.
And she got to leave?
Apparently, yeah.
So they know how to get out of the fucking desert.
Apparently, yeah. And this is one thing I'm kind of curious about because, yeah, I don't, like, you always hear about this being them wandering the desert and them getting lost in the desert, but I actually don't think they're lost. I think they're just not able to leave.
Gotcha.
And there's this whole thing I know is going to come up about that, but so he sent their two sons. Their names are Gershom and Eliezer.
Eliezer?
Eliezer.
It's like one of those old-timey people who can't say a word with an A at the end without adding an R to it.
Eliezer.
Like it's really Vagina. Eliza. Yeah.
Vagina.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Jethro comes and sees Moses wandering the desert.
Right.
Moses tells his father-in-law about everything that's been going on, and Jethro is delighted to hear about all of it. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, right?
He's delighted to hear about it?
Yeah.
Sorry about all the suffering that you guys have endured, but this is delightful.
This is just delightful.
So delightful.
Yeah.
Wait till Raul hears about this.
The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people. So they would come, bring their problems to him, and he would dole out what God says about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
Jethro, I almost called him Raul. Jethro says to him, "Why do you alone sit as judge?" Moses answered him, "Because the people will come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions." And then Jethro says, "What you are doing is not good. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. You must be the people's representative before God." So, like, you have to represent us to God.
Right.
Instead of like figuring out these disputes and everything, right? And he's like, he goes, "Select capable men from all the people," only men.
Of course.
Actually, that doesn't end up being true. There are women judges, but
good.
Specifically, he says, "Select capable men from all the people, appoint them as officials, and have them serve as judges to handle smaller disputes, right?
The things God doesn't need to hear about.
Right. Yeah. Stuff that maybe God has already ruled on, you know, like there's precedent. Yeah. Right. And then if there's a difficult case, then they would bring it to you.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
So Moses does everything that God, that Jethro says. And then Jethro returned to his own country.
Okay. So literally Jethro just showed up to be like, this is how you set up a judicial system.
Yeah.
FYI. Yep. You're doing it all wrong. I'm going to go now. And I'm going to go home and tell Raul your delightful story.
Right. Moses is like, what? How are you getting out of here? It's like the island of Lost.
Yeah.
For them. Yeah. They're all in purgatory. Or whatever that was.
There was a smoke monster.
Yeah, there was a smoke monster. Holy crap. I'm starting to think this is all based on Lost. So then they come to the desert of Sinai. And Moses goes up to God on the mountain, the Mount Sinai. And God is like, this is what you're to say to the descendants of Jacob. If you obey and keep my covenant, you will be my treasured possession. God's basically telling them to bring everybody to this mountain and everything and have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day because that is the day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai. Put limits for the people on the mountain and tell them, be careful that you do not approach the mountain or touch foot on it. Whoever touches the mountain is to be put to death.
Ooh.
They are to be stoned or shot with arrows.
Oh my gosh.
Not a hand is to be laid upon them.
Oh, well, they got mountain all over them.
Yeah.
They want to get that mountain on you.
Right. No person or animal shall be permitted to live. Only when the ram's horn sounds a long blast may they approach the mountain. And then he said to the people, Moses said, prepare yourselves for the third day, abstain from sexual relations. And it says in the footnotes, this is probably not because it's a sin, but probably because that would probably make you ceremonially unclean. You know, you wouldn't be literally, you wouldn't be clean.
Right.
When meaning God.
You'd have that badge all over you. Because right. It's just men, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, they could wash their dicks.
Again.
Yeah. It's probably for the best around that time.
Right.
To just wash your dick immediately after having sex.
Just be washing your dick multiple times a day.
I mean, really. Take care of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on the third day, there was thunder and lightning and a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. People are, you know, trembling because it's, you know, the mountain's shaking violently and there's fire and all this stuff. As the sound of the trumpet grew louder, Moses spoke and the voice of God answered him.
It's very cinematic.
Yeah.
This is the part you always see in the movies where he's on top of with the lightning and the dark clouds and right. And he's holding up his staff and shit.
Yeah. Lindsay's just gesticulating, waving her arms, basically. The Lord descended on the top of the Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top. He said, go down and warn the people. Do not force their way through to see the Lord.
That's a real Wizard of Oz thing.
I know. I was singing the same thing. It's very Wizard of Oz-y. Many of them will
Wizard
perish.
Wizard of Ozzy is a completely Wizard of Ozzy. Thing.
That's what they should.
I don't know why he doesn't have an album named that already.
Sharon. So God's telling Moses, make sure that they don't push their way.
They can't see me. Nobody else can see me.
Moses is like, yeah, you already told us. You already warned us about that. Lord says, go bring Aaron with you. So Moses went down, blah, blah, blah. And then...
Oh, that's nice that he included Aaron.
Yeah. Aaron has to because he's going to be the head of the priests. Yeah. Yep.
He did a lot of work, that Aaron. I feel like he doesn't get enough credit.
That's true. It's true. That's what a lot of the priests thought, too.
Oh, I take it back.
No. Yeah. You shall have... So now we get to the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
And God is going to start doling out the law to Moses. So we find out, you shall have no other gods before me.
Right.
Right.
So none of those golden calves or whatever other Egyptian gods people are worshiping.
Right.
Literally just the one God, which again, wouldn't have to say if there wasn't other gods.
Right. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth.
Well.
Or in the waters below.
Okay. Well, that everyone who is religious these days has broken that fucking rule.
I know. I don't. It literally says no image. Because, well, it then also says you shall not bow down to them or worship them. But the literally images? It's saying, yeah.
I mean, we worship a little dead man on a cross.
I know.
We.
We worship a dead man on a cross. A little dead man
on a cross.
Yeah.
And Catholics specifically have a whole real, like, do those not count as of heaven, Jesus and Mary?
I don't know.
Is that the loophole? No,
I don't think there is.
Existed on earth?
I don't think there is a loophole for this. If there is, I don't understand what it is. Because they might say, well, it's not meant to be a god. Like, that crucifix isn't meant to be a god. It represents God. But still, it pretty clearly says, do not make any image for yourself in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth. Like, don't make an image of anything. Like,
only Muslim
photographs shouldn't be allowed.
The Muslim religion follows that more closely than any other religion then, because they don't
do anything of the Prophet Muhammad.
Right.
Right. But this is literally anything.
This says don't make an image of anything?
Yeah.
Wait, read it to me one more time.
You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of their parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know there's a lot to unpack there. I was going to get to that part too.
Okay, so I guess maybe if you really think about it, he doesn't mean they. I don't know.
Yeah.
They do not mean don't make an image of anything. They're literally saying don't make an idol. Like an image specific to worship.
Literally, it's saying don't make an image of anything and also don't bow down to it.
Right. I'm just...
Because it said in the first commandment, you're not going to have any gods besides me.
Right.
So for whatever it's worth, that's what the second commandment is.
Right on.
You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, so no blasphemy.
No sex... God talk.
Yeah. So basically this show is not good. remember the Sabbath day.
Yeah, but that's been in Judaism, it's Saturday.
Yeah.
And in Christianity, it's Sunday.
Right.
How did that happen?
That's Jesus, because of the resurrection.
It happened on a Sunday?
The resurrection happened on a Sunday.
So now every
That's why we have Easter Sunday.
Right. So then they just made every Sunday the Sabbath?
Right. It just shifted.
The Bible says it's Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever makes it convenient,
I mean, the Bible
doesn't even
really specify which day of the week it is, you know?
That's true.
Because, let's be honest, it wasn't real.
Well, I think they said six. So if we go off the thing, it says the sixth day, right?
Yeah.
So which would be Saturday?
Right. I mean, yeah, but
on the seventh day he rested when making the world, right? Isn't that the reason behind the Sunday thing? Wasn't it the seventh day he rested?
Seventh day he rested, which would have been a Saturday if he started on a Sunday.
Oh, did he start on a Sunday?
No, it wasn't real. Like, that's the thing. Genesis never, like, the book of Genesis never says that he started and it was a Sunday.
We're just attaching it to our current week structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
I gotcha.
And the same for them, though. Like, really, like, at the end of the day, when they're getting this instruction, they don't know what day God started.
Well, and every sixth day is not the same day.
Yeah.
Every week either.
Right.
If you literally are just going every sixth day you rest, that moves the day that you rest on.
Does it? Wait, no.
Wouldn't it?
Like, it'll always be like a Saturday, for example.
Do you go every 6 days?
Yeah, because there's 7 days in a week. So if you work for 6 days, and then on the seventh day you rest. So yeah, every week,
that'll I'm be saying the same. If that with the 6 day rule,
yeah,
it would fall on a different. If we have a 7 day week and it's the six every 6 days you rest, then that would not fall on the.
No,
same
no, no.
Day.
It's. I mean, no. So it's every seventh day.
Okay.
It is every seventh. It's 1 day a week.
Gotcha.
And it's always going to be the same day.
Gotcha.
Okay.
It didn't seem like what they said, and when you first read it, it sounded like every 6 days.
Yeah, by 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath. Yeah. And it says, like, because the Lord made the heavens and the earth.
Oh, that's what I just
said. Then he rested on the seventh day.
All right, there it is.
So that's an important thing to make the top 10 list. And then honor your father and your mother. You shall not commit murder, coming in at number 6.
It's real funny that that's like just smack dab right in the middle.
Yeah. Am I right about that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep, number 6. And then number 7, don't commit adultery.
What does it actually say? Don't commit adultery? Or
it says you shall not commit adultery.
Okay.
You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. You shall not, so no lying.
Right.
You shall not covet your neighbor's house or your neighbor's wife. Really just, you should not covet.
Right, your neighbor's things.
Your neighbor's stuff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you shall not commit rape.
Coming in at number 10.
No, the Ten Commandments don't say that. In fact, the Bible doesn't say that at all.
Oh.
So that's unfortunate. Yeah. Would have been a good spot for it, though.
Wouldn't right that be there. Part of the coveting thing, though? Isn't it? Wouldn't rape be considered some sort of form of coveting?
Coveting literally is saying don't feel envious of your neighbor at all. It doesn't say anything about, like, don't rape some woman who is not your neighbor or something like that, you know?
Yeah, but she's somebody's possession at this point, either the parents or the husband.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be coveting your neighbor's goods?
I mean,
you have to want to do it.
It sure would have been nice if that's certainly not how anybody ever took it.
Right.
you know? And it would have been nice if God had just straight up been like, don't rape people.
Oh,
you know?
But you know, no one cared back then.
Right. Yeah.
Or still do, but.
So no, thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house or wife or ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. That comes in at number 10.
These are the modernized versions of the Ten Commandments, though, right? Because I've read some of them that are much more specific in the commandments. Like, it doesn't just say thou shalt not steal. It says something. Yeah, there's like a paragraph that goes along with it.
I mean, these are English translations of it, obviously, but this should be somewhat representative of, like, it doesn't say anything more than thou shalt not murder. I'm trying to find, where was the stealing? Yeah, you shall not steal. That's it. That's all it says about it.
All right.
Yeah, coveting your neighbor's stuff gets more text to it than murder.
Yeah, well, they have to be specific theft. About what stuff is.
Yeah. Yeah. Neighbor's wife, male or female servant, the ox or donkey or anything that belongs to him. And then so we're done with the Ten Commandments at this point. Says to make an altar of earth for me. And then says, do not go up to my altar on steps or your private parts may be exposed.
What?
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
What?
Yeah.
Why? What? Don't go up to my altar on steps.
Right.
Or your private parts will be exposed.
Yeah. Which I didn't bother looking up the Hebrew for it, but I would imagine it's something along the lines of genitalia or something in the original text. I can't imagine it says private parts.
What?
So the footnote for this says,
I wonder if it's just meant to infer shame. Like, you will have shame. And they somehow managed to get that throughout some sort of telephonic history telling of this turned into your genitals.
I don't know. But it's, the footnote says men who ascended to such altars would expose their nakedness in the presence of God. Although Aaron and his descendants served at the steps at stepped altars, they were instructed to wear linen undergarments. So it must have been a cultural thing back then, probably in Canaan. When you would go to an altar like this, you would expose your nakedness before God. And they're going to change this up. They're going to...
We were all born naked.
We were.
The rest is drag, as modern prophet RuPaul has stated.
Saint RuPaul.
That's so weird to include. Yeah. So if they built it with, they literally built it with steps, and then men just went up there and exposed themselves to the altar?
I guess is what they normally would have done.
Conditioning men to expose themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is real problematic.
Right. And so they would still expose, it sounds like from this footnote, it sounds like they would still have exposed themselves going forward. They just would have had underwear on.
Check underwear.
Yeah. I don't think it's the same stuff as what the Mormons had, but.
Oh, okay.
And then we get into some really interesting laws.
Oh, are these more Exodus. God laws? Or?
Yeah, these are God laws. So Exodus, well, sort of. This is laws handed down from God.
And they're different from commandments.
Yes.
Because the commandments cover the big stuff.
Right.
And these laws are specific to how to exist in life at the time.
Right. So I'm going to specifically say this is Exodus 21. And if you've never read this chapter of the Bible, it's one of the most important chapters of the Bible to read. Because we're going to start digging into slavery.
Oh, no.
I know. These are the laws you are to set before them, is what God says. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he is to serve you for 6 years. But in the seventh year, he shall go free without paying anything. If he comes alone, he is to go free alone. But if he has a wife when he comes, she is to go with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the woman and her children shall belong to her master, and only the man shall go free. But if the servant declares, I love my master and my wife and children and do not want to go free, then his master must take him before the judges. He shall take him to the door or the doorpost and pierce his ear with an awl. Then he will be his servant for life. So let's start by digging into this here. So Hebrew servants specifically will serve for 6 years and then go free on the seventh year.
Yeah, men.
Men, yeah. And then, which is different from foreigner-born slaves who can be inherited, are allowed to be inherited to your children and stuff like that. But if you want your Hebrew slave to be your slave for life,
you get them hooked up.
Get them a wife.
And then hopefully they have children.
Yeah.
And hopefully he's compassionate enough towards both of those things that he's like, oh, I want to stay forever. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a real shady thing they got going on.
Exactly.
There.
It shows you how to keep them being your slave forever.
Yeah. It's the loophole.
Well, not even forever. So technically, we're not getting into this right here, but there's a year of Jubilee, which I believe is every 50 years, where every 50 years, literally all slaves go free. Foreign or Hebrew slaves go free.
How generous of them.
Right. But
every 50 years.
Does that
years.
Mean you can't sell your slave to somebody who isn't Hebrew right before the year of Jubilee?
Yeah.
Right? And then wait until that year of Jubilee is over and then buy a bunch of slaves again.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Gross.
So yeah, that's kind of the kicking off of slavery. If a man sells his daughter as a servant, she is not to go free as male servants do. If she does not please the master who has selected her for himself, he must let her be redeemed. Doesn't say what that means. He has no right to sell her to foreigners because he has broken faith with her. If he selects her for his son, he must grant her the rights of a daughter. If he marries another woman, he must not deprive the first one of her food or clothing and marital rights.
Oh, they literally mean sell my daughter into a marriage. They don't mean it says servant, but they mean a wife.
That's what it looks like.
Gross.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Do not deprive her of food or clothing. If he does not provide her with these three things, she is to go free without any payment of money.
So if he can't take care of his lady, she gets to go.
Right.
I mean, you know.
I'm going to be kind of jumping through some of these. Like, there's just a few of these that I kind of wanted to read out, but, you know, I'm not reading out the entire chapters or anything. Another one is anyone who kidnaps someone is to be put to death, whether the victim has been sold or is still in the kidnapper's possession. This is literally, so a lot of people take this to mean you can't take somebody as a slave, right?
Right.
By kidnapping them. What this means is you can't kidnap somebody's slave.
Oh.
You can't steal another person's person.
Okay, read it again.
Anyone who kidnaps someone is to be put to death, whether the victim has been sold or is still in the kidnapper's possession. So what they're actually saying, how this is meant to be interpreted, really, is you cannot steal somebody else's slave.
Yeah, but it sounds like if you steal somebody to sell, yeah, like a little boy that's in a well, if you steal that little boy and then, yeah, you sell them to strangers.
Oh, it took me a second to figure out what you're talking about.
Wouldn't that be considered kidnapping?
If you take somebody who's...
If you took a little boy that did not belong to you.
Story of Joseph.
Yes, and sold them to people. Isn't that kidnapping?
I mean, one could argue it is, but yeah. So there are Christians out there who like to look at this verse and say, well, see, God says don't take slaves. But that's clearly not what God is saying, because God just told you how to trick a Hebrew slave into becoming a slave for life, right?
Yeah, it just means literally don't take somebody else's slave.
Yes.
Don't steal. But that's covered by the Ten Commandments.
Don't steal, right. Yeah, there's a lot of overlap in this stuff. It's not a very efficient system, because like we're about to get into a whole thing about how to deal with bulls.
Okay.
Yeah. And then this is Exodus 21:20, very important one. Anyone who beats their male or female slave with a rod must be punished if the slave dies as a direct result. But they are not to be punished if the slave recovers after a day or two, since the slave is their property.
Oh my God. Basically, it's literally don't beat your slave to death.
Right.
Just to almost death is fine.
Yes.
What if it takes longer than a couple days to recover? What if they beat it and it takes a couple weeks?
Takes 3 days. It takes 3 days to recover. Well, if they die on the third day, then it's not their fault.
Oh.
Basically.
But what if they get better on the fourth day?
I mean, that's fine. As long as they get better at any point, it's literally like as long as they don't die within about 2 days.
Gotcha.
Roughly 2 days, you know?
Right.
And in the King James version, this verse says the slave is your money.
Mm.
Literally, like, it's like this investment. Is property.
Yeah.
This is property. An owner who hits a male or female slave in the eye and destroys it must let the slave go free to compensate for their eye. An owner who knocks out the tooth of a male or female slave must let the slave go free to compensate for the tooth. What's interesting about that is right before this, it talks about anybody who is not a slave. It says, if there's a serious injury, you are to take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. So this is clearly setting up a separation in the law for people who are free. This is what happens when you take out somebody's eye or tooth.
If they are
a free person, and this is what happens if you own that person.
So if you and I are strangers and I poke your eyeball out, then you get to poke my eyeball out. Or somebody, my punishment is I lose an eyeball.
Right.
If I owned you and I took out your eyeball, then you just get to go free.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. All right. If a bull gores a male or female slave, the owner must pay 30 shekels of silver to the master of the slave, and the bull is to be stoned to death.
Aww.
An interesting one. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of... They must have really had some issues with bulls, because there's 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs about bulls goring people.
Huh.
And what to do about the bull. If a thief is caught... This is an interesting one for people who are fans of the Second Amendment. If a thief is caught breaking in at night and is struck a fatal blow, the defender is not guilty of bloodshed. But if it happens after sunrise, the defender is guilty of bloodshed. So if somebody breaks into your house at night, you're allowed to kill them.
Right.
But if they break in your house during the day, you can't kill them.
Okay.
I know. It's really odd one. Weird. Let's see.
I would just be breaking into people's houses during the day then. They're at work. No one's home.
Right.
And B, like, they can't, like, if they kill me, then they are in trouble. So they probably wouldn't.
Right.
So I would just be fucking doing that day racket.
Right, just in case.
Yeah.
That way you at least get to live.
They're just literally giving thieves when to commit their crimes.
Yeah. If a man seduces a virgin who is not pledged to be married and sleeps with her, he must pay the bride price. If a father absolutely refuses to give her to him, he must still pay the bride price for the virgins. And then immediately after that, it says, do not allow a sorceress to live.
So, sorry, I have to keep breaking these down into non-Bible words.
Yeah.
So if you rape a virgin, basically.
This one is saying if you seduce a virgin. Mm-hmm. So there are laws about raping virgins also. And that's why I just want to call this out, is this one is literally like you seduced a virgin.
And had sex with her.
Yeah.
Pre-marriage.
Pre-marriage. Yep.
Then you have to pay the father the bride price. Dowry, as you will. And she can then, or then he can then choose to either give her to you or not.
Right. Exactly.
But he gets that money either way. Exactly. I would start some sort of scheme with my daughter at that point. Right?
Yeah.
Where she just goes and has all these powerful men seduce her.
Yeah.
And have sex with her.
Yeah. And then she claims to be a virgin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the dad's like, no, I'm not giving her up.
Right.
And they just keep making money.
Yeah.
Off of it that way.
Seems like a real Jacob thing to do, or a real Abraham thing to do.
Yes. But then also don't let a sorceress live.
But also don't let a sorceress live.
So she'd probably be considered a sorceress.
If she was doing that, why not?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do not let a sorceress live. This is obviously what, caused some issues, let's say, for women in Salem, Massachusetts.
Yep.
A while back.
Definitely. That was the rule they used to burn those women at the stake.
Yep. Whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord must be destroyed.
Ooh.
So that's fun. Do not miss.
What does a destroying somebody look like?
That's a good question. 20. Let's see. Does it say the total destruction of the idolatrous Canaanites was later commanded by the Lord? So I would say that then it kind of sounds like it's saying the people should be destroyed, not just the person.
I just wonder what the destruction of a person would entail back then.
Yeah. I mean,
why not say kill? I guess right. That's my point. Why not say destroy? Kill.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord must be destroyed. Yeah. I don't know. But right after that, it says, do not mistreat or oppress a foreigner, for you were foreigners in Egypt.
Oh, this really just it shows you the picking and choosing of what to follow within the Bible, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's another interesting one. If you lend money to one of my people among you who is needy, do not treat it as like a business deal. Charge no interest. Do not spread false reports. Do not help a guilty person by being a malicious witness. Mm-hmm. It's very prevalent.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do not follow the crowd in doing wrong. When you give testimony in a lawsuit, do not pervert justice by siding with the crowd. And then this kind of takes a 180 on this. And do not show favoritism to a poor person in a lawsuit. Okay, it sounds like it's going one direction and then just complete about face. Do not accept a bribe. Do not oppress a foreigner. Again, it says, do not oppress a foreigner. You yourselves know how it feels to be foreigners because you were foreigners in Egypt. And then it says that God says, I am sending an angel to guard you along the way. Pay attention and listen to him. Do not rebel against him. If you do everything that he says and that I say, I will be an enemy to your enemies and deliver you to the land of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Chappage.
So he's sending a bodyguard?
Yeah, an angel to act as a bodyguard.
Is this the angel of the Lord, or will this angel end up having a name? Does it ever come up again?
No. I don't think the angel ever comes up again. And what's weird is it keeps swapping out an angel with God being there. You know, like sometimes it's God that's there, sometimes there's an angel.
So disappointing.
I know.
I really want to learn about the angel in his life with these people.
I know.
Like, does he get frustrated with
Where's
them?
That book?
Yeah. Also, does Joshua come up again later?
Joshua has a whole book.
Okay. Yeah. I was for a minute there, I was going to be like, was that it for Joshua?
No. What's interesting though is like he is extremely important in the story of the lore of how the Israelites get to setting up the kingdom of Israel. But it's interesting to me because I was expecting a bit more of an origin story to him, and there is none.
Yeah, he just shows up.
He just shows up.
Right.
Yeah. Unless there is more information later on, like that totally could be too. And then God is saying, like, you know, I will drive out the Hittites and the Canaanites. I will drive them out. I will not drive them out in a single year because the land will become too desolate and the wild animals too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out before you until you have increased enough to take possession of the land. So this is why you're going to be wandering for 40 years, or at least one of the reasons, is because we're not ready yet. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like God saying, like, we're going to let them weaken and then you'll
we
be
have
able to go
slowly occupy the territory instead of doing it all at once.
Yeah. Says the God who took out the Egyptians.
Yeah.
And that's as far as we're going for today. Yeah. So next episode, it's going to be a little interesting because we're getting into the part in Exodus where it just really delves into, like, here's how you perform the rites and rituals of Judaism.
Okay.
Right? Which is great and all, but it doesn't really make for compelling podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, to get into, like, what is the length of the robe for priests, you know,
yeah,
and all that stuff.
Really already don't care.
Yeah. So we're going to have to do some jumping around
for
the rest of the book, probably. But
I thought you were going to suggest that we actually perform one of the ceremonies, but that seems wrong, I think, doesn't it? It seems a little wrong.
That might be a little bit appropriation-y.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Might be a little disrespectful. It would be like we could go to synagogue sometime.
Yeah, we have those here.
We do have those here. We do. There is one not too far from us. And I've never been to synagogue. It would be interesting to go. But yeah, I'm just thinking we're going to probably be skipping around a little bit, in the next episode, more than we've done so far. I think we'll probably finish off Exodus in the next episode.
Nice.
Yeah.
Exiting the Exodus.
Yeah. And they all live miserably ever after. Thank you for listening to the show. If you want to show your support, think about picking up some merch from our online store at BibleStoriesForAtheists.com/shop or BSFA.cc/shop.
Why can't we go out? Are there spiders?